Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm Liz Loza, and I am joined by Matt Harmon. Today, we're going to talk free agents. I have to say that Matt is one of my favorite go-to people for projecting free agents. So I'm going to let him lead. But Matt, you do an excellent... I mean, you were talking about Keyshawn Vaughn as a potential keeper, like back in, I don't know, December, which might as well have been 5 years ago by now. So you always have your finger on the pulse of who's moving where, which means that our listeners are in for quite a treat. I have my pulse on like what gossip is happening in the NFL. And Aaron Rodgers has supplied us with no shortage of that. So instead of just, covering who will be a free agent and where they might be going, we're going to tell you where we think some of these top free agent stars should be signing. We might be proven wrong, but like, hey, we're fantasy wonks. We have opinions and they matter, damn it. And this is a fantasy football podcast after all. So, Matt, I mentioned Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, I don't know about you. Like, I think I know the answer to this.
Right. Hey, Liz, pause for a second. We could start the podcast without me telling you congratulations for you and the other guy winning that the award for the FSWA. So congratulations. Eckler's Edge was awesome. It provided entertainment and also real-time value for all those Justin Jackson, myself included, Justin Jackson heads late in the season. So shout out to you.
Thank you very much. Yes, Eckler's Edge did win an FSWA award for best short form video. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. There could be, if we're talking, you know, particularly about tight ends, the Chargers might be a landing spot for of the players, particularly at that position on this list. But I appreciate that. Let's dig into it because I talked about gossip and Aaron Rodgers and, you know, him and his new best friend slash agent. Pat McAfee certainly getting Twitter a buzz, even more than regular earlier this week. I don't like what I was going to say. I don't know about you. I think I'm pretty confident that I know the answer of this. But did you even bother clicking on it? Or were you just like, I am logging off for the day when you saw, you know, these screenshots of the gratitude post?
I was on my bachelor party this past weekend, so I kind of missed the whole Aaron Rodgers Instagram, and that obviously stretched into Monday, all that. So I kind of missed the whole Aaron Rodgers Instagram post. I didn't really see it until Tuesday morning, and I was like,
I
was like, I don't really, this just feels like Aaron Rodgers, you know, kind of being a weirdo online, which is something that we should, I mean, that's kind of who he is, right? I didn't expect him to go on there to Pat McAfee and announce his retirement, but I was one of the 130,000 goofballs that watched him live on the Pat McAfee show for a little bit. Okay. And frankly, I'm glad I did because of the whole cleanse thing that we heard about. That took up a chunk of my time, which again, coming off my bachelor party last weekend, I feel like I probably could have benefited from that cleanse, but that's all.
I don't know if you want to do that one though. I mean, if you're interested in some green juice, there's Splendid Spoon. they'll mail you, they'll ship you every week some products. I don't think you need to, take whatever niacin or whatever that is to the point of vomiting. But anyway, no, I'm not here to dispense medical advice, and frankly, neither should Aaron Rodgers, but that's a whole other podcast.
No, but I do think that the whole Aaron Rodgers thing, like, I think that he's already kind of told the Packers that he's coming back, and now all of this is just like posturing for the contract negotiations because he is going to need an extension. And of course, the biggest part of that is whether or not they bring his good buddy Davante Adams back, who is our top free agent here. I think that Davante Adams just gets franchise tagged by the Packers and they figure the rest out later. Do you disagree at all?
No, I think that's exactly the place that we're going. I mean, we had Davante Adams on Eckler's Edge. I asked him point blank, like, what's up? Has Aaron told you anything? And I mean, he very predictably said, no, I don't think he is decided. Comma, I wish he would decide because it would help me out a lot, which made me believe that he was being transparent, right? He was sort of like, listen, I wish I knew because I could be making some plans. But I think you're right. If the franchise tag is available to the Packers, why wouldn't they use it? Like, it might not be nice, but whether Aaron Rodgers returns or not, like, they have an opportunity to keep the Scottie Pippen half of this incredible duo.
Yeah, I think if Rodgers decides to retire, because I kind of think at this point, based
on
rap
sheet, he's not going to retire. He's either
I don't think he's going to retire. I think he's coming back to Green Bay. But I think in terms of likeliness to happen, I think it's he comes back to Green Bay, he retires, or he gets traded. The trade thing just feels really unlikely at this point, but I could be wrong. But I think the key, I do think that like them franchise tagging Davante Adams, showing him like. And they got to make a lot of moves. Like they got to cut like Zadarius Smith. They got to cut some other key contributors just to be able to afford Davante Adams on the franchise tag. Cause there's like they're way over the salary cap at this point. So a lot of work to be done, but I do think they'll end up figuring it out. Adams and Rodgers will both be back in Green Bay. I think if Rodgers is gone, certainly if he gets traded, then I think all bets are kind of off with Adams, but one way or another, I think that Adams finds his way back in Green Bay.
Yeah. I think he stays in Green Bay. I even actually think if Rodgers does force a trade, then Adams is still gonna, I mean, unless he chooses to hold out. Like, I don't think there's a world in which the Packers, I mean, you make a great point about the salary cap space, but I just feel like there's so much ego in that small town, really, that I can't see a situation where he is, like, booted. But unless they're just fully, like, restocking the refrigerator, to quote Scott Pianowski. Let's move on to Mike Williams, because this one's interesting. I mean, Mike Williams was starting to have a resurgence at the top of 2021, and, you know, we're excited about the way that he was being used by Lombardi and maybe finding different levels of his skill set, but then, you know, defenses keyed in on it, figured it out. Like, I'm not quite sure. He did manage to stay relatively healthy as far as Mike Williams is concerned, so that helped him, but I'm not quite sure coming off of 2021 and what ultimately we found out down the stretch, if that helped Williams's stock heading into this free agency period.
No, I don't know that it helped his stock. I think he just kind of is what he is as a player, which isn't bad. I mean, he's always been kind of unfairly maligned because he was drafted 7th overall. Like, he's never going to be that type of player, but he's a big play threat. He wins in contested situations. He's a really good fit with Justin Herbert. He's just not ever going to be the player that it was cute the first few weeks, you know, when even Brandon Staley was like, I think Mike Williams is the best pass catcher on our roster. It's like, well, I don't know about that, pal, but he just can't be that down in, down out route runner winner at an X receiver. He's not that guy. But I think there's a pretty good chance he could get franchise tagged by LA. Like, let's kick this can down the road one more year. There's no reason for them to get weaker at the wide receiver spot because they are pretty shallow there after Mike Williams. The franchise tag is only $18.5 million, and the Chargers right now have the third most cap room. That's the only reason I think it's possible. Now, if he does get to the open market, I think a fun fit for him could be the Philadelphia Eagles, because I think they cannot have poor for friggin' Jalen Reagor's sake, they can't have him out there as a starting receiver at this point. I think Devontae Smith is a really good short intermediate guy. I think he's a number one receiver, and I think Williams could give them a nice little compliment. But I do think most likely Williams is another guy that could be like a surprise franchise tag guy just to kick the can down the road one more year for LA.
I appreciate you bringing up the cost of Williams and how it certainly fits into the Chargers budget. I'm sure the Chargers are feeling maybe it'll be interesting, like, especially if you look at this from a market perspective, and the Rams have just won the LA market.
Yeah.
Plenty of people would say that they already had the LA market, but this certainly solidifies that. And so the Chargers now need to be thinking about, they do have this franchise quarterback. I know it doesn't matter much, but he did win the MVP at the Pro Bowl. It's not the same as what Matt Stafford did by any means, but there is a lot of skill position talent that has good fan following. And so it'll be interesting to see if they make some business decisions based on growing the brand within the city, given the fact that, like, it pretty much belongs to the Rams now, and seeing what they might try to do. I'm not sure that Mike Williams is like, I don't know what his jersey sale number is, right? But I have a feeling that that is going to factor in, maybe not significantly, but it's still going to be one of the factors on the budget sheet when his contract is being looked at.
Yeah, regardless, he makes the offense better, makes Justin Herbert better. That is like a check for the Chargers. And I think even besides, I think the Rams factor, you're right, it is a pressure point for them. And just the AFC in general is a pressure point. You know, it is going to be, this will probably be, I wrote this in my Bengals, like, kind of what it's going to take for them to get back to the Super Bowl right up from, I think it was last week. But, you know, the AFC is a slog now at this point, right? We've got Burrow, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, not in that order. A hot take sports media, not in that order. And obviously, like, I think this is the last year that both of Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert will not be in the playoffs. So I think that from that angle, the Chargers will have to feel some heat there, which is why I have them franchise tagging Williams, and they're going to make some more splashes in my list here as well.
Allen Robinson, if we're talking about franchise tags, got hit with it last year, not coming off of a great season. I'm pretty sure much will be revealed about his health as the months move from the spring into the summer. I can't imagine the Bears looking to retain him, right? So now if we're thinking of potential landing spots, like, there's going to be, I mean, he's going to take a pay cut. A lot of this depends. There's so much, like, as I'm thinking about that, there's so much upheaval at the quarterback position, which is kind of bleeding into all of these options, right? Like, now that we have the Tom Brady answer, not to even bring up the Aaron Rodgers question mark, but, you know, I think about the Bucks and so many of the free agents there, and like, would Allen Robinson potentially be, this is not an apples to apples comparison, but assuming Godwin leaves and has the ACL injury, we'll talk about him a little bit later. Like, could Robinson be a cheap fill-in to move to Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they need another perimeter receiver anyways, now that Antonio Brown is obviously out of the mix there too. They don't have any depth behind them. So yeah, it's not a one-to-one comparison with Godwin, but that makes a ton of sense. Like, obviously the first thing with Allen Robinson is, I agree with you, he's going to take a pay cut. I think he could potentially take a significant pay cut to just finally, like, okay, no more questions. I'm playing with a good quarterback, right? Like, maybe Kansas City would be interested for a number two wide receiver. I don't know. So again, those are the, and Tampa Bay is another one, but obviously there are quarterback questions there. So there's no like clean spot that has a ton of cap room and has a clear-cut answer at the quarterback position, I think, except for the Chargers. And I did put them just in case, like, let's say they don't franchise tag Mike Williams. Maybe they go, I wanted them to sign Allen Robinson last year before the un-American franchise tag was placed on Allen Robinson by the Chicago Bears. But another fun spot, depending on how you think about it, if, and this is like a little bit of like, are the bridges burnt there completely? What if he goes back to Jacksonville? I know I've seen a few people toss that one around. The Jaguars have the second most cap room in the NFL. They have a disgusting depth chart at wide receiver. And obviously they could have a very good quarterback. You know, people think that there's all this talk that when he went to the Bears, you know, that's his fault for picking Trubisky. Now, if you want to be fair to Allen Robinson, Trubisky was at least coming into his second year. We didn't know he was complete dust yet. Trevor Lawrence is coming into his second year. He could make a similar bet here on a much more likely to work out prospect. I love the Doug Peterson hire. I ranked him as my favorite head coaching hire on an article that I just put out on the website today. I think this would be a really good fit for Robinson. Go back to a place he already has some familiar ties with in terms of ownership and stuff like that. But most importantly, is paired with the quarterback that we do think is ascending.
I think that would make a smart business move for Robinson. Again, like, I'm interested in his medicals and to see what those check out as, but no clear spot other than not Chicago.
Yeah.
I wrote up this next player, Mike Gesicki, as one of my most intriguing players heading into this offseason, a fantasy star for the most part, given the tight end position. Mike Gesicki, obviously a free agent in Miami, and like, my goodness, have the Dolphins made some headlines, not ones that you necessarily want to be attached to. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, like, Gesicki was just behind Jalen Waddle in targets after this last year. And I think we can all agree that Tua Tagovailoa is streaky at best and needs a Gesicki-type player over the middle to steady him. And so I would like to believe, assuming that the team is in on Tua now, given how young he is, that they would try to retain Gesicki and keep him in place. Because there's not much else outside of Jalen Waddle here for this type of quarterback.
No, and Mike McDaniel coming from that San Francisco 49ers coaching tree. Dalton and I talked about this on the last podcast, how McDaniel was pretty instrumental in designing the game plan with Deebo Samuel, you know, kind of evolving his role as the year went on. Mike Gesicki is not a Deebo Samuel type of guy, but he is a unique player, as you mentioned, or if you want to be really not generous, as I usually am with Mike Gesicki, he's a fake tight end. Not a bad player, though. I don't mean to disparage.
He's a slot receiver is what you're intimating.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Correct. That's a much nicer way to say it. But I think there's a good chance he is just franchise tagged by the Miami Dolphins. $11 million for tight ends. That's not that expensive. And the Dolphins have the most cap room in the NFL. So there's a pretty good chance he's just back there. But he's a player I would connect with the Chargers for. And I feel like I keep talking about the Chargers now with every player. But he's a player I would connect with them. You know, they have Jared Cook and Donald Parham at the tight end position, or at least they did last year. He would give them like a clear cut upgrade and a potential matchup nightmare there at that tight end spot if he gets to the open market. I think he's a more likely signing than a player like Allen Robinson, who I just kind of threw out for fun.
Yeah, I think a lot of that depends on whether or not, because you make a good point about how Gesicki is not a tight end in the way that we think about tight ends. And if Mike Williams were to leave the Chargers, then I don't know if we have a lot, like too much overlap in skill set with the addition of Gesicki. Like, does he do stuff that's that different from Austin and Keenan Allen? I don't know if there's enough variance. Like, then you lose that big bodied, assuming Williams leaves. Like, you could have a big bodied tight end, because I don't think anyone's like trusting of Jared Cook's hands. In fact, if you look back at the season, I don't think the Chargers are trusting of Jared Cook's hands.
Yeah, 100% true. I do think it is worth noting that, like, obviously Jalen Waddle was used as a slot receiver a decent amount too, so they already have, like, for in terms of him and Mike Gesicki and Keenan Allen, overlap. There is some marriage and overlap there that would be fine, but it kind of depends on what they think about Josh Palmer, who had a couple of moments late last season. Do they like Josh Palmer as a guy that's just ready to walk into Mike Williams's role? Then they have a perimeter receiver in place, and then they have a guy in Mike Gesicki who could, again, keep working that intermediate area of the field. I mean, the Chargers really need a burner. I would love to give them that type of receiver, but there's no one like that in free agency that's really available and clean medically.
No, that's a good point. Dalton Schultz, another tight end who he flirted with like 80 receptions last year, obviously put a wrench into fantasy fans' idea of what Dak was gonna do and which receivers he would be most locked in on. Obviously, you know, we spent a lot of the fall and winter talking about how those ideas were dashed in large part because of the defense as well, but you don't really like to see, if you're a CeeDee Lamb investor, for example, Dalton Schultz with like 80 grabs for 800 yards over the course of a season. My belief here and the reporting that we've seen thus far intimates that he's likely to be franchise tagged and stay in Dallas as well.
Yeah, similar with Mike Gesicki there. The Cowboys aren't as flush with cap room as the Dolphins are, but the franchise tag at $11 million for tight end, it's fine. Like, you can make that work. They're also a team that looks like they're going to lose Michael Gallup in free agency, maybe, depending on his market, and we're going to talk about him later. But they're probably going to cut Amari Cooper, too, because his salary just hasn't been worth it for them. So we'll see. They might have a little more room there and a big need then at pass catcher. But if Dalton Schultz does make it to the open market, I think he's another – I swear to God, we'll talk about more teams than just the same three teams we've talked about so far. Yeah. But he's another guy I think would be a fun fit in Jacksonville. Again, Jaguars are flush with cap space. They're absolutely barren at tight end, just like they're barren at wide receiver. They're actually worse off, I think, at tight end than they are at wide receiver, which is saying something. Obviously, Doug Peterson offenses have featured tight ends before with Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. Some history there. I think he would just immediately give, like, all right, here's Trevor Lawrence's security blanket that really never developed between the tight ends and Laviska Shenault there. So if he makes it to the open market, I like that fit a lot.
You know, on Monday's pod, Monday or Tuesday, I forget which day it came out. I think it recorded Monday. Anyway, the pod earlier in the week with Andy and Scott, Andy was talking about how he is surprisingly all in on the Jaguars. And if they keep stocking the fridge for Trevor Lawrence, then that becomes all the more intriguing. Though, I mean, as someone who's like already thinking about Travis Etienne, I don't know how much I want to see these other players move into, like, I don't know, I kind of feel like ETN was supposed to be, and we didn't get to see it, the security blanket that was given to Lawrence. Obviously a different position, but in terms of like a pass catching option, like a safety valve for him in PPR friendly leagues. Like, that was an interesting play. And I'm sure, you know, by the summer, his stock will go through the roof once we hear enough of those puff pieces over the summer of like how the connection and the rapport is just like it was in college.
It's back.
So it's back. Yeah. Speaking of back though, Cordarrelle Patterson had a revelation of a year, right? The Pro Football Writers named him the most improved player. He was, my gosh, either the, you know, for fantasy purposes, a top 10 running back or a top 10 wide receiver. A lot of that had to do with some addition by subtraction on the part of the Falcons with Calvin Ridley finding himself unavailable and Mike Davis not, well, Mike Davis, frankly, being what we thought Mike Davis was going to be. And so all of that fast-tracked CP's evolution, if you will. But he's 30. And as ageist as it may sound, like, this is the NFL and there are windows. And if we think those things, the front office of franchises certainly thinks those things, especially when putting together deals, right? There's no world in which Cordarrelle Patterson's going to get a deal that's like longer than 2 years at most because of his age. That's just not really done. So he's a fascinating person to talk about. And I mean, would it surprise, again, like, I know this isn't exciting, but like, would it surprise you terribly if Atlanta's like, what are we going to do? Unless they can't afford him, right? Like,
that's the question.
I don't know, but you're on the last legs of Matt Ryan. You don't know what Calvin Ridley's status is. Cordarrelle Patterson can do all of the things. He provides so much utility. And even though a special teams contract won't garner him as much money as like a wide receiver contract will, or even a running back contract will, like, I'm just, where's a spot that you could see him going and providing a lot of versatile utility, but also making any sort of dent?
It's a great question. I think you're right to point out the fact that Atlanta might not be able to afford him. They're currently, they'll make some moves, but they're currently in the red in terms of salary cap space, which is unbelievable because that roster stinks. So that it's a tough scene when you're in the red and your roster is not good. There are a couple other teams that find themselves in that position, but the Falcons are probably the most glaring. So I think that's the question for Patterson. Why would you leave the nest of the one coach who finally unlocked you? But do you want it? You, as you said, he's also 30. His career arc's not like most 30-year-old running backs, of course, but this might be his last chance to really cash in. Does he take this moment, try to find a pretty fat, relatively speaking, fat 2-year deal? And I think in that case, the Dolphins could be another team to look at there. They have a ton of cap space. They have a huge need at running back. McDaniel, as I mentioned, was a big part of designing the Deebo Samuel role. I think Cordarrelle Patterson he's not going to be as good of a pure wide receiver as Deebo Samuel is, like, in terms of beating zone over the middle of the field, running those dig routes and everything like that. But there could be some potential overlap there if he's trying to find like a placeholder for that type of player in his offense. While also still, I think if you're the Miami Dolphins, you sign Patterson, let him do some fun stuff in your offense, and you're still drafting a running back. Just like obviously at the peak of the 49ers offense that they had Elijah Mitchell and Deebo popping off.
Do you think Pete Carroll might like, I feel like Cordarrelle Patterson might be like a Pete Carroll sort of like, that's nifty.
Yeah, like Russ will love this, right? And then Russ like, no.
I don't know what to do with it. But, I mean, there is constant, like, there is lack of depth in the backfield, which I think has severely negatively affected the efficiency that Russell was able to produce, or the inefficiency that he did produce last year. And having something gadgety, and the wide receivers are both like, kind of malcontents a little bit in Seattle.
Think Tyler Lockett's a malcontent? They're Bible school buddies.
Yep, I think, sure. That's one way to put it. I don't know. I think he's going to be a fascinating. I feel like if he doesn't stay, his landing spot is going to be one where we're all sort of like, I didn't see that coming, right. And I probably should have.
I think that's a really fair point, which is why the Dolphins kind of stuck out to me. Just because we're all talking about Seattle, Rashad Penny's a guy I think is probably going to, I mean, look, the Seahawks are going to max deal Rashad Penny to come back there after that finally worked out for them. So I think he's a guy that could easily end up back there since that kind of worked out for them late last year.
Yeah, I do think he's going to return. I also think that, like, the Seahawks good luck in the NFC West. You're going to have to do something creative if you're going to keep up with the rest of your division. Rob Gronkowski is back in the news, not just because his best friend retired, but because he said, like, well, I don't know, maybe I go play with Joe Burrow. Like, those Bengals look pretty interesting. He is a free agent. Do you think he probably just hangs it up, given all of the abuse his body has taken and the fact that, like, he's over 30 and that's not a great side of 30 to be on in the NFL?
That would be my guess. I'm trying to not buy into the Tom Brady's not actually retired conspiracy theory, and he's just taking a year off to go play with the 49ers next year or something like that. And then Gronk just follows him there. So I'm trying not to buy into all that stuff. I think Brady's retired and Gronk follows him.
I agree with you. Juju Smith-Schuster is interesting. You know, he did just take a 1-year deal to stay in Pittsburgh at a lesser amount of money instead of going to the division rival Ravens, and wonder how he feels about that now. He's obviously coming off of an injury.
Or the Chiefs.
Wasn't the year. Or the Chiefs, right? Wasn't a year that he anticipated, but obviously that didn't help his stock or his market heading into this free agency period. But he is, if we're talking about utility players, like, Juju does bring a certain amount of calm to an offense, and stability is important.
Yeah, I actually think he's gone from being one of the most overrated receivers in the NFL to kind of being underrated at this point. I think, like, the proper place to rate him would be he's just a really good big slot receiver. And I think he would have a pretty decent market, not a decent market in terms of, let me say that again. I think he would be a pretty decent free agent signing for some team on the cheap this year. Now, he wants to return to Pittsburgh. We'll see about that. I think Kansas City could be an interesting spot again. I don't know why he wants to return to Pittsburgh.
Why? I was just thinking about, like, why does he want to?
I don't know. But he says he does. So I guess that's what he wants to do. Maybe he just really loves the fries on the sandwich there. Now, I think if we're looking at I'll give you two teams here, and you could pick which one you think is more interesting. The Jets, who I haven't mentioned yet, but they have a ton of cap space, and I think they have a need at wide receiver. And then the Titans, I think, are another interesting team.
I think the Jets makes a lot of sense. I mean, they also could benefit from a veteran presence. That team is so young.
Yep.
That you could use the C word with him, you know, the culture word a little bit with Juju. He'd be one of those glue guys who kind of helps shepherd along the younger players on the team. And, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think of the way in which he can relate to Zach Wilson, but, like, if he managed all those years with Ben Roethlisberger, I'm sure he can impart some wisdom.
Sure.
And they both have real bad O-lines, so he can probably say, like, you're going to get smacked a bunch, kid. And you know that. Yeah, so I would say that probably, like, from a bird's eye view perspective, he makes the most sense in New York. If I were him, I'd prefer to go to the Titans, though.
Yeah, Titans, I have them also for the next player here, David Njoku. I think they're a team, they're in the red in terms of salary cap space, but they, Mike Vrabel basically said, like, we need to be great around Ryan Tannehill at the end of last year. And you look at that roster right now, it's not great around Ryan Tannehill. They've got nothing at tight end. They had nothing at wide receiver behind AJ Brown, which is why I wanted to mention two guys like David Njoku, obviously a tight end, and then Juju as well. Like, Juju is I would have said he was a poor man's Cooper Kupp going into last season. Now I think you have to say he's, like, a super poor man's Cooper Kupp because of the season that Kupp just had. But, you know, in the type of things that Kupp can do is that big slot receiver, you know, there's a physical guy that works in the blocking game. I think Juju can be that type of player for Tennessee, who obviously wants to still be, like, a run first operation. And, you know, again, David Njoku is, like, I don't think he's, like, your solution at tight end, but he could be a part of the fixing things around Tannehill equation.
Teddy Bridgewater. I will say that I think that people forget, and obviously that the injury or the concussion at the end of the season didn't, you know, help us remember him. And he isn't necessarily like a flashy player. You don't install a Teddy Bridgewater so that you have, like, these, like, large ADOT numbers. But again, he adds calm. He adds steadiness. I really like, and I know that this is, you know, off of what the narrative is predicting, I like him in Tampa Bay. Like, if the team is going to see what they have in Kyle Trask, it feels like Teddy Bridgewater is a fantastic, no pun intended, bridge quarterback for Trask to develop. And the Bucs have to imagine, especially given the number of big name free agents that they have and Brady's retirement, that they are going to be in a rebuild situation. Like, I'm not even 100% sure that Arians is really going to come back, right? So they spent a second round pick on Trask, and all of, you know, Eric Edholm, our NFL draft expert, wrote about how Trask is one of those guys you don't expect to be great and then ends up being great. That's what he did in college. He's kind of always the underdog. And if you are, and he was great in high pressure situations. And so if you are going to shepherd along this younger player, then I think Teddy Bridgewater, for a much lower price than Garoppolo, who's owed money, or Carr, who's owed money, then why not take this guy that you can get on the cheap while also seeing you're not going to make a playoff run. So
right.
Why don't you start to develop?
I think that's a great point. This whole free agent quarterback class, like these teams, I think there's a lot of teams that could go with this model, even if they don't have a Kyle Trask already on their roster. And you know probably the rookie quarterback class better than I do right now, but everybody knows it's not an elite rookie quarterback class, right? I think there's a lot of teams that could go with the placeholder and, you know, develop a rookie behind him type of model. And this free agent quarterback class, there's no, like, answers here, but there's a lot of guys like Andy Dalton, like Tyrod Taylor, like Jameis Winston, like Marcus Mariota, like Teddy Bridgewater. Mitchell Trubisky's even getting pop as, like, a guy. I mean, he's got to go to New York and try to compete with Daniel Jones, right? I guess. But anyways, point is, Teddy Bridgewater, I think, is in that mold of a guy. And I sent him to the Colts because all the talk out of Indy, it's basically like it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when Carson Wentz is out of there, whether it's by trade, whether it's by cut. And I guess they're just, I mean, that's another new quarterback for the Colts. It's unbelievable. But they look like a team that is still a really good infrastructure, is ready to win right now, but they're probably not going to get into the Jimmy Garoppolo sweepstakes. I can't imagine they're going to swing any higher than that or something like that. So why not grab a Teddy Bridgewater, keep yourself afloat while maybe developing a rookie, even though you don't have a first-round pick because of Carson Wentz, who you're going to cut. I don't know. Tough scene.
If you were a quarterback, if you were one position away from making the playoffs and making a run theoretically throughout the playoffs, I don't know. I mean, that is a dollar and cents answer, right? Like, that's not a talent answer. It's like, we don't want to pay for this. Even we bet on it and we came up short. Christian Kirk, interesting. It's interesting what will happen in Arizona altogether. I mean, like, I don't want to make a big meal out of Kyler Murray scrubbing his social media, but Nuke Hopkins certainly did not look rejuvenated by any means this past season, right? Like, that's a little bit problematic. He's getting up there in age, particularly for the kind of player, the kind of physical player that he is. The window's a little bit different than someone who's just like a excellent route runner. He wins on physicality. Nuke does. So when you get older, that gets a little bit tougher. Christian Kirk is a player that I really liked coming into the NFL draft. And like, there were flashes of it, but the whole skill set never fully ROI'd. And I don't know, frankly, how much of that has to do with Kingsbury. And how much of it, you can't say he didn't have a good quarterback, right? You can't say that there wasn't talent around him. You can't say that he was constantly dealing with defensive attention. But I just don't think, like, there's enough juice there to make a splash in the market.
No, just shy of 1,000 yards this year. So he had a fine season. Arizona is light at pass catcher with Nuke Hopkins questions, with Rondale Moore having a historically low average depth of target. I don't know what they're going to do. Like, Rondale Moore did not play wide receiver last year, so we'll see if he can play wide receiver in his second season. Kirk is a free agent. AJ Green is also a free agent, but they're just a little bit over the salary cap right now. They can make a couple moves to get under. That's not the worst thing in the world, but Arizona has a lot of questions to answer. So presuming that Christian Kirk gets free and he doesn't have a big market, I could see a team like the Falcons being interested in him, although they don't have a ton of salary cap space. Their wide receiver depth chart is problematic if Calvin Ridley gets gone. And then Detroit is another one. Like, after the emergence of Amon-Ra St. Brown, I don't think they're like as thirsty at wide receiver as they would have been. Now, I think there's, you know, St. Brown probably like in the Cooper Kupp mold, big slot receiver. I think Christian Kirk is most likely best in the slot, but Detroit does still need warm bodies on the perimeter. And I think Kirk is just like they could potentially interlap a little bit there. So now the more I'm thinking about it, the less I like it. But this is the type of free agent market. I think I thought at first, you know, like last year, it was destiny that they'd go big fish hunting at wide receiver for the Detroit Lions. But now I think they can afford to shop in kind of the Christian Kirk mold there. But I don't know if the fit, the more I talk about it, I don't know if the fit's that great.
Yeah, I do think you're right that the Lions are good. We should have mentioned them for some of these bigger bodies, but I don't know if Kirk is, I'm thinking as you were talking, like, are the Texans that wild to think about? I mean, certainly the talent there is shallow. We don't know what they're doing. There's obvious questions at quarterback there as well, but this might be one of those. Anything. No, but Kirk might be cheap enough and enough of a name and have enough inside, outside, XY utility to stabilize whatever the hell else they're building.
Yeah, Brandon Cook's not a slot receiver. Nico Collins, like a pure X receiver, who I like. Nico Collins is like a, you know, a late round dart throw this year. Just think he's a pretty good player, but who knows what the hell's, as you mentioned, who knows what the hell's going on there. I think Kirk's a pretty good call. That's a good one.
James Conner, his teammate, also a free agent. 1 year deal. Obviously, he was on coming off of his time in Pittsburgh, managed to stay relatively healthy until they, you know, ran him into the ground unnecessarily at the end of the year and had the postseason Shock. Results that they had as a result. So I think they need him. I feel like he should stay put, and I feel like they should reward him for the season he had. I don't know if the money is going to work out that way.
Chase Edmonds is a free agent too. So yeah, they'd be right. In a bit of a tough spot, which is why I have another free agent going there. I have Leonard Fournette going there in a situation where James Conner bounces. And I've got two fun fits for James Conner. We talked about the Jaguars a lot. I think the Jaguars could be interesting because you don't have to make him your feature back, but James Robinson popped his Achilles. We'll see if he can be the next Cam Akers and come back and average under 2 yards a carry or something like that when he returns too early. Or, you know, and Travis Etienne is another guy coming off an injury and might not have been like, I mean, who knows what the hell Urban Meyer drafted Travis Etienne to be. That was always weird, but he might not be, he wasn't necessarily drafted to be like a full-time feature back. I think like an Etienne, James Conner tandem could be kind of fun. And then another one, I've got Carolina as a landing spot for James Conner too. Panthers cannot go into like next year with just Christian McCaffrey and some goofball like Chuba Hubbard. I think that could actually give them finally like a bit of a 1-2 punch to use McCaffrey to his strengths while also kind of having a banger there in James Conner to handle some of the dirty work. We'll see. We've mentioned the self-awareness thing with Christian McCaffrey before. We'll see if he'd like love that idea. But there was a time where they signed CJ Anderson, you know, to be that guy. And obviously then McCaffrey just basically made CJ Anderson irrelevant. So maybe they've different front office, different brain trust here, but maybe they kind of get back to that thought process here.
Well, and the thing about Conner that I think is underrated is the fact that he is a solid pass catcher. Hubbard is not. Like the Chuba
bless
Hubbard
his heart.
Is
no,
not,
he's not.
Yeah, not a good pass catcher. Did not have that in his skill set or in his practice. Like, was not used that way in college, so he didn't even have the experience trying it. I mean, this was his first call to action for it, so. I do feel like there's an opportunity there for Conner to not just make this like as predictable an offense as like, here is CMC and we know what he does. And then Conner's going to come in and do the dirty work. He can be used on pass catching downs and in pass catching situations. And so I think you're right. It depends on what Christian McCaffrey what his tolerance will be for some help. But I like that one. That one's fun. All right, let's talk a little trenches. Why not? What's more fun than offensive line talk in the offseason? Actually, after watching Joe Burrow get sacked 7 times in the Super Bowl, it should be talked about. We got 4 guys to discuss. I'm going to rattle them all off and let you place them where you think they might best fit. Teron Armstead, Orlando Brown Jr., Ryan Jensen, and Brandon Scherff.
All right, let's start with the most boring one. I'm going to go with Orlando Brown and just send him to back to Kansas City. They traded a high draft capital for him. They don't want to. They actually succeeded in what the Bengals hope to do this offseason. Hopefully it's what the Bengals hope to do this offseason and just like laser focus on the offensive line to figure that thing out. So I have him going there. I've got Teron Armstead going to the Dolphins. I think he could just go to the highest bidder. You know, he's still a really good left tackle. I think he gets free from New Orleans. So I think he could go to the Dolphins, where they just need to kind of like have a guy that fits into that sort of system, but also just stabilizes an offensive line that basically failed to rebuild. And then I have Brandon Scherff going to the Bengals. I think basically the Bengals, they don't need to go, again, big game hunting like Teron Armstead, you know, like, they can get by, I think, with Jonah Williams at left tackle. What they need to really do is like hit a triple or a double with Brandon Scherff in free agency. He's got some health questions, but he's a good player. Their guard spots stink. And then like draft a right tackle in the first round. And hopefully that's like good enough to kind of get you there. You know, it's not like the Chiefs signed Joe Tooney last year, but it's kind of sort of close. And then Ryan Jensen, I have him going to the Chicago Bears. We saw what Justin Herbert getting a that's the reaction I was hoping for. Like we saw what getting a center for Justin Herbert did after like a bad offensive line performance in his rookie year. Corey Linsley signs there last year that stabilized it. And I just think Ryan Jensen is a tone setter. He's a badass. And I think, again, bit of a culture fit there with what Matt Eberflus wants to do. So I like that fit for Justin Fields there.
I'll take all of those. I think those are all great. I particularly like you're thinking about the Bengals O-line. I also just feel like everyone's talking about, we all know what the Bengals have to do, but so much of it is going to be chemistry and gelling, and that doesn't just come on paper for the trenches in particular. So, but I think that's
I mean, the Chiefs, as good as their offensive line was, it did not, like, gel until probably, what would you say, like,
mid-season.
Yeah, mid-season, November. And then, like, by November, December, it's like, okay, Creed Humphrey is working out. Our day three guard is working out. You know, Joe Tooney and Orlando Brown, like, our big swings. It's all kind of coming together. And then they happen to stumble into Wiley at right tackle. But, like, that's what kind of has to happen. You got to pull these guys in from all these spots. It has to gel. And then you also have to get lucky. You have to have your rookies be ready to play. And you have to kind of fall ass backwards into a starter somewhere. That's like, which is, again, what kind of happened with Andrew Wiley there. So, yeah, it's an interesting potential rebuild there for Cincinnati. It's not a clean process.
I also think I understand why everyone makes the Chiefs to Bengals comp in the postseason between 21 and 22. But I think the difference is that those O-line injuries to the Chiefs in 21, right, like in Super Bowl 55, was that those O-line injuries were new to Mahomes. Like, he had not worked with that deficiency over the course of the entire regular season. He also had hurt his foot. Like, those deficiencies came in the postseason, and then everybody was adjusting on the fly, which the Buccaneers were able to take full advantage of. It's a little bit different because Burrow has gotten used to, for better or worse, working behind a horrible offensive line, right? And so it's a known deficiency. He understands that he can scramble a little bit. He knows that he is going to get blown up. And I think that that is just like another layer that we're not talking about. And I think it's another layer that's going to affect the gelling of the O-line, because it's going to affect his cadence of calls.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you also hope that the coaching staff hasn't, like, you know, the thing with coming with Justin Herbert out of his rookie year, he was under so much pressure. But it's like, man, he's so good under pressure. Do they really need to make it? Do they really need to overemphasize the offensive line? Say, yes, yes. Just because he's great under pressure doesn't mean you need to put him under pressure. It scared me a little bit with, like, Zach Taylor and some of the Bengals comments after the Super Bowl. Like, we trust Joe in these situations under pressure. It's like, yeah, those situations will come naturally. Don't make it worse right than it has to be.
Totally. All right. Injured free agents. Let's go through these quickly. We've touched on a couple of these players already. Chris Godwin, we talked about torn ACL. Thoughts on really bad timing, tough scene for him coming into this market. I wish there was a study, frankly, on like what a late season injury does. If there is a percentage that agents assume you will be hit by. Like, if you are down, like, if you thought you could have commanded X, you should expect Y percentage less if you have, you know, an injury like sometime in December or late November.
Godwin is so good. He's so young that I think there's a chance that he could still cash in, like, maybe not to the top of the market. And I also think, like, what Cooper Kupp just did is that, like, I think Chris Godwin could do that in the right situation. I think they're both really, like, not similar players.
In the same
but I think
year? It's not. He's going to need 9 months.
No. And, I mean, like, in an ideal world. Like, in an ideal situation. Like, pre-injury, assuming no injury, I think he could do that, like, in the right situation. You could argue that, you know, he kind of had that year at some points, too, with Brady there. Although this was really supposed to be that. But, yeah, anyways, point being, I think he's a great player. I think he would make any team, any offense better right away. I think the Bucks, I just spoiled it. I think the Bucks will be hard pressed to, want to let him go, and he might come back at a discount because, you know, he likes it there and everything, won a Super Bowl, likes Bruce Arians, Byron Leftwich, what they did for him in this offense. But I do have the Browns as a pick for a team that could snag him up, could still pay pretty decent. They've got cap room. They're going to let – I think Jarvis Landry is done there. Their wide receiver position is ghastly without Landry there. Rashard Higgins, also a free agent, not that he's like a star or anything. But, you know, I got to get my Higgins references in. But, yeah, I think he would be a really good fit there as like a badass blocker, a tone setter in the run game who also would give them credibility at wide receiver.
Talking about the Browns is a perfect segue to talking about OBJ. We all know he tore his ACL left knee second time now in his career during the Super Bowl. A lot of people really upset about his yardage prop.
Bad break.
He wanted to stay in LA, right? He said he'd give them a discount to stay in Los Angeles. Just had a baby. Congratulations. So I'm sure there's some familial ideas and thoughts here. Yep. But he's also OBJ. So, like, how much of a discount does OBJ actually take?
Well, maybe it's like you put it into the universe pre-Super Bowl that you'd take a discount to come back to LA. And the universe says, well, you're going to have to take a real big discount to come back now. I think he should go. I think, like, don't even think about leaving. You know, just go back to LA. Stay with the Rams. You had success there. You were right. Like he said, I could feel that I was going to have like an all-time game. It was clear he was going to have an all-time game there. He was hitting the right momentum. You know, Robert Woods could be a potential cap casualty for them. I kind of doubt it because of how beloved he is there, but they obviously need the space and they could get a little bit of relief there post injury from Woods. So they're going to need wide receiver help. It feels just silly that either side would want to break up this marriage right now, even though there are a lot of questions with the player.
Michael Gallup also, another bad timing in terms of injury.
Even later.
Yeah. Unlikely to come back to Dallas. I think we're all assuming he won't return. Where do you think that he might fit nicely? I mean, you were mentioning the Browns and I'm sitting here thinking about it, but I also don't know.
I'm not trying to see Baker Mayfield shoot inaccurate little passes outside the numbers to Michael Gallup. I'm not. No, yeah. Let's give him the bunny hops to Godwin on the dig routes.
So where do we like Gallup? I mean, there's a couple of things here. There's injury. There's maybe not the most versatile skill set. There's experience because of the injuries. So there's a couple of negatives in his surrounding him.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't totally rule out that he comes back to Dallas if they cut Amari Cooper, which I do think there's been some whispers about that, and they do need the salary cap space. I think they'll kind of decide between DeMarcus Lawrence and Amari Cooper, and I just don't think Cooper is that as good as his salary would indicate, and I think that they've said as much coming out of the season. So I've always been a big Michael Gallup fan. I think there's a chance he would come back to Dallas on a discounted deal in that situation, but two landing spots. We talked about the Lions earlier. That feels more like a skill set that would make sense for them. But one I really like is the Patriots. I like Jacoby Myers as a slot receiver. I think Kendrick Bourne is kind of a nice little utility player. The Patriots need like an actual bona fide number one receiver. No lock that they get that out of the draft I mean, there's a lot of good rookies there. There's plenty, but you never know. I think Gallup, like I said, I might overrate Gallup. I just think he's a very good player, but I think he could be like a temporary solution as their X receiver. Enough already with N'Keal Harry out there, you know, crack blocking guys, whatever the hell he's doing out there at the X receiver spot. Let's get a real solution there. I think Gallup could be a solution, health depending.
I don't mind the Raiders either, to be honest.
Yep. Yep.
I think that his skill set could match up nicely, and we'll see what happens with Derek Carr. Speaking of quarterbacks, Jameis Winston, coming off of torn ACL, most of the rumblings seem to be that New Orleans will run it back with him and kind of hold their breath and see what happens throughout this Jameis Winston experience, which will no longer be tilting for Sean Payton, because he's going to go to Fox and replace Troy Aikman, but that's a whole nother pod. instead, it's going to be Dennis Allen's problem.
Does it feel like the Saints have just... It feels like... No, I don't know about giving up. It feels like they're kind of like waiting Sean Payton out. Like, oh, he'll get the itch around week five, and then we just bring him back in, push Dennis Allen back to D.C. We still got Pete Carmichael at O.C. We promoted internally basically to every position. Let's bring Jameis back. Let's bring Michael Thomas back, and maybe Sean Payton will change his mind, like I said, around week six and come right on back.
First of all, how are they going to do that? Secondly, I talked to Sean Payton during Super Bowl media week, and he is interested in broadcasting. Like, that is happening.
Oh, as he should be. Let's line those pockets, baby.
Absolutely. He's talking to Drew Brees. Admitted, he was like, yeah, Drew Brees tells me all the time. I know what he does. I know what he makes. Like, if Troy Aikman is bouncing from Fox, then it feels like there's a pretty big opening, and Sean Payton will probably sign like a maybe one-year deal with a second year option. And that'll leave him open to eventually going back to the NFL in Dallas when Mike McCarthy doesn't get to a Super Bowl. I don't think the postseason's even going to be enough next year. And then boom, Sean Payton becomes, I mean, can you imagine the like noise that the Brinks truck is going to make when it backs its way up to Sean Payton's house and is like, hello, welcome to the star again. Welcome back to the star.
I didn't say that the Saints plan makes sense or that it was going to happen. It just feels like a pie in the sky situation that they've got no shot. But obviously Sean Payton, his little retirement here from the Saints has set him up to make just a load of cash the next 2 years
from broadcasting in Dallas. That Sean Payton is like, I'm too old for this shit. Like, he's literally doing the Danny Glover. And, like, we don't know if Michael Thomas is – we don't know if Michael Thomas wants to come back. Michael Thomas is not a player who has a reputation for being, like, very easy breezy, go with the flow either.
Yeah, they say they want him back, but there's going to be another conversation there. But anyways, yeah, it sounds like the Saints could bring back Jameis Winston. One other fit I wanted to throw out there – this whole, like, Aaron Rodgers to Denver thing, it ain't going to happen. But one guy who could at least, like – maybe rescue some of these fantasy players is like we get old Jameis back, just slinging heaters to Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy too. I mean, the reality here Denver is, yeah, Noah Fant, Tim Patrick doing his thing as well. Obviously, Javonte Williams out of the backfield. Like, the problem with Denver is the same problem that I had, you know, going into last year, which is like, how the hell are you going to have all of these fantasy relevant players who command targets? Cortland Sutton commands targets. Jerry Jeudy commands targets. Noah Fant. Tim Patrick. That was the guy that nobody thought was going to do anything last year. But it's like, Tim Patrick is a pretty good player. Like, he's not just going to go to the bench and hide out. And then they had two backs last year, but I think they'll still have, maybe they might have two backs again this year. You never know. Javonte Williams, though, is still going to command a ton of touches. How are all of these guys going to be good? And you've got like a really good backup level caliber starter in Teddy Bridgewater, or, you know, insert next year Marcus Mariota, some rookie, whatever. The one guy who might be able to, like, all right, at least let's get these guys into maybe starting consideration is pre-LASIK, pre-New Orleans Saints, Jameis Winston.
You said pre-LASIK. That was too much. I don't disagree. It's a very, very good point. Can you imagine the math conversations we're going to have if and when that occurs over the summer?
Yeah, because the good news is if they sign, like I said, Andy Dalton, Marcus Mariota, draft some rookie, just don't even have the math conversation. It doesn't work out. Don't draft any of these guys. But if Jameis, maybe we can have the conversation. Maybe.
Fuzzy math, sure. Antonio Brown, this is the last guy we're going to talk on most. Okay, we're not going to talk about it because we've had enough. Just, you know what? Jameis Winston brings enough volatility that we don't need to discuss AB. So that's going to do it for us for this episode. We've given you over 50 minutes of free agent talk, and it's not even March. You're welcome for now being well ahead of the NFL curve. You can light up every single cocktail party with the information we just imparted to you. Follow me on Twitter at LizLoza_fat. Follow Matt at MattHarmon_BYV. And while you're there, make sure you're following the mothership at Yahoo Fantasy. Scott and Dalton will be back on Tuesday. Until then, enjoy. We're out.